We're going to look at chapter 7 of the book of Nehemiah. Chapter 7. We didn't have the broadcast today. If any of you wondered what was wrong, they're having difficulty with the tower. The station was off all day. He's hoping that they might get it going by tomorrow, and if so, he'll give us 2 half-hours tomorrow. So he said anyway, if he gets it going. So that will make up for having lapsed today. Chapter 7. Now, let me say this. If you were reading through at home, and if it was your practice, like lots of people, just to read a chapter, it's good if you could even do that, but if you were reading a chapter and you came to this chapter and this was your daily reading, you would come to the end of this chapter and say, oh my, I'm glad we got to the end of that. And if you're not too good at pronouncing some of those names, I'm sure you'd be embarrassed if you were reading it out to the family, or if you were reading round and it came to your turn with one of those verses and you didn't know how to get over them. Actually, we're not going to read them all tonight. You'll see why. You can read them at home. But let us read the opening verses to begin with. Now it came to pass when the wall was built, and I had set up the doors, and the porters and the singers and the Levites were appointed, that I gave my brother Hananiah, the ruler of the palace, charge over Jerusalem, for he was a faithful man and feared God above many. I said unto them, let not the gates of Jerusalem be opened until the sun be hot, and while they stand by, let them shut the doors and bar them, and appoint watches of the inhabitants of Jerusalem, everyone in his watch, and everyone to be over against his house. Now the city was large and great, but the people were few therein, and the houses were not builded. And my God put into mine heart to gather together the nobles and the rulers and the people, that they might be reckoned by genealogy. And I found a register of the genealogy of them which came up at the first, and found written therein. Then from there on, from verse 6, you have the whole list of them whose names were found in these records of the genealogy. Now let us go right down to verse 64. Or verse 63. Look at verse 63. And of the priests, the children of Habiah, the children of Koz, the children of Barzillai, which took one of the daughters of Barzillai, the Gileadite, to wife, and was called after their name. These sought their register among those that were reckoned by genealogy, but it was not found. Therefore were they as polluted, put from the priesthood. And the Tirshatha said unto them that they should not eat of the most holy things till there stood up a priest with Urim and Thummim. The whole congregation together was 42,303. We'll stop for now reading there for a moment or two. As I said, if you were reading this chapter at home, it might become a little boring to you, and you'd say to yourself, now what? Why is this chapter here? Is there any message in it for me? And by the way, that's the only real way to get benefit from the reading of the scriptures. What is the message for me? You see, we saw in chapter 6, when we were reading through chapter 6 last week, we came to this sort of critical point. So the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month. Well, right from the very start of this book, that seemed to be the objective. Nehemiah wanted to get to Jerusalem in order to rebuild the wall. Well, now when you come to chapter 6, in spite of the many difficulties he had to face, difficulties in being released from his responsibilities in Shushan the palace, the difficulties he got when he saw the awful mess that the place was in with all the rubbish and rubble lying there, he had to get that cleared, and then the difficulty of getting the others stirred up to help him, the difficulties they had from the oppressors from without, and they had difficulties from within. Yet now, in spite of all these things, he reached the point where the wall was finished. You might say, well, now, that should finish the book. What's the good of going any further now? Hasn't he accomplished his objective? We've reached it. We've finished with it. But it doesn't finish there. Now, when you come to chapter 8, you'll be introduced in chapter 8 to something that's very interesting. There, they're going to hold a great convention, what today would be called a revival. And another man is introduced to us whom we haven't read about in all those 7 chapters. When you come to chapter 8, you're thrown back to the man whose name is found in the book preceding Nehemiah. That is the book of Ezra. You're introduced to Ezra in chapter 8. Where Ezra has been all those 7 chapters here is hard to tell, except perhaps he was away down in Babylon. He perhaps had responsibilities there. But in chapter 8 he has come back. And he seems to be the leading figure in chapter 8 at this great convention. He has the ability to stand up and read the scriptures in a way that they could hear. And then he's got to interpret them to them, cause them to understand them. Now that becomes a strange thing, but that's beyond our study tonight, why he had to do that. But it is interesting that Ezra comes on the scene and seems to be the leading figure in that great time of revival in chapter 8. Well now, why put in chapter 7? If the wall is finished, then the whole congregation are going to be gathered together in chapter 8, and they're going to have this great revival of the reading of the scriptures. What is this connecting link in chapter 7? Well now, you will recall that Nehemiah had to get permission to leave his responsibility down in Shushan the palace. He couldn't just say to the king, by the way, I'm having 3 months off, you know, I've got to go up to Jerusalem, so you'll forgive me, I won't be here as your cupbearer. He couldn't do that. He had to be granted permission to be away up at Jerusalem. So you remember how he prayed about it? And at last he was granted permission. But he promised he would only be away for a certain time. He would have to come back. Now, after he finished the wall, he could have said, now, gentlemen, I came here to build the wall, and you've helped me, and we've finished the job, so I'm going to be back to my job in Shushan the palace. I've got to be back there and attend to my responsibilities. Perhaps you'll just take over and see how things go now, and be on your own. Could you have blamed him for doing that? He had promised to be back. He's accomplished his job. He doesn't do that. Now this is the interesting point, the first lesson we've got to learn, the opening verses of the chapter. Now it came to pass when the wall was built, and I had set up the doors and the porters, and the singers and the Levites were appointed, that I gave my brother Hanani and Hananiah, the ruler of the palace, charge over Jerusalem, for he was a faithful man and feared God above many. Here we have, as it were, in the opening verses, the rule of the people by acknowledged governors. You couldn't leave the people in the city just to do what they liked. Wherever you have the thought of a city, you've got the thought of rule. If you could find a city today without a city council, and I'm not upholding everybody that's on the city council, some of them would make you weep at times of what they do and what they say. But nevertheless, bad government is better than no government. You can think that one over and you'll find it's true. You may have bad government, but what would you be like if there was no government? Suppose we had no rules in the city of Raleigh. That you just drove up there and you could drive any way on any street, take the turn when you like, no traffic lights. How many of us would be alive next week? You've got to have some kind of rule. And then again, suppose you went up there and no one attended to the repair of the roads. And you'll agree with me, there are times when you feel the neglect and duty. But nevertheless, there could be worse. Suppose the roads were never attended to. Streets were not attended to. If you don't believe me, just take a drive someday down certain streets. I'll not mention them here, and see the mess they're in. See what it would be like if all the city was like that. Wherever you've got a town or a city, you usually have a group of men who are in government. There are certain rules, certain regulations. It's the same when you come to a country. Now, says Nehemiah, I'm going away. But when I go away now, I want to see this place left orderly. The gates are there, but there will be porters there. For these gates will require to be closed at a certain time. And there will be a time for opening them, and so someone must have that responsibility. Responsible for shutting and opening the gates. And that becomes an interesting point here in verse 3. And then, of course, there's going to be some sort of regulation with regards to the religious side of the city. And he says there will be singers, and there will be the Levites. So the porters, and the singers, and the Levites are all appointed. In plain words, there's got to be rule. And rule suggests order. Now let me remind you again that our God is a God of order. That's one of the lessons you learn as you read through your Bible. Go back right to the book of Genesis, to creation. See how orderly God proved himself to be in creation. Take the 6 days, and you couldn't alter what was done in any of those days. If you tried to take what God did on the fifth day and put it back to the second day, it wouldn't work. If you saw what he did on the sixth day, you couldn't put that back into the third day. That would be reversing it. But you'll find that what God did on the first, second and third day was he formed. Yeah. Because you remember it was formless and empty. It had become that. And God reformed it. Then the last 3 days he refilled it. And he couldn't fill it up until it was properly formed. And when you go through those 6 days, you'll find that God is an absolute God of order. Everything fits in perfectly. When God brought the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt and they became one nation under God, they had to be given certain orders. When the tabernacle was set up, it was set up in an orderly fashion. And the camp of Israel, as each tribe camped around that tabernacle, there was a certain place. Now, they didn't come along and say, hey, our tribe is going to be here. This is going to be our place. Oh, no, we were here first. We're going to have this center. You can go over there. They didn't argue like that. They were given their orders. And you'll find the men who camped right in front of the tabernacle were the chief men. And then you had the tribes. And you had three tribes on either side of the tabernacle, north, south, east, and west. They were set in an orderly fashion, and the tabernacle was right in the midst of the camp, with that glory cloud of the Shekinah glory resting right there in the center. So they were circled properly around the person of Christ, as it were, because all these represented him. When they had to move, it wasn't a matter of the survival of the fittest. They had to move in an orderly fashion, and God gave them the order in which they were to move. And even the taking down of the parts of the tabernacle, the vessels had to be covered, then the curtains and the hangings had to be taken down, the posts and the pillars and the boards, and on they went. When they came to the place where they were to encamp again, the same thing happened. Foundation things laid first, the curtains and coverings put up, and then the vessels put into order for worship. And then the camps were set around them. See, God was a God of order. When it came to the nation of Israel, whether it was when they were on the move or when they settled, God was a God of order. Now you carry that thought right through even into the New Testament. And Paul, in writing the letter to the Corinthians, said this: let all things be done decently and in order. Then in writing to Timothy, he said he was writing these things that thou mayest know how thou oughtest to behave thyself in the house of God. A perfect order. When you get to the book of the Revelation and John is taken up into heaven, there's perfect order up there. Our God is a God of order. If we learn that lesson here, we see that Nehemiah was a man of God. He saw to it before he left that everything would be in order. There would be the porters to look after the doors, and there would be the singers and the Levites. Now, notice what he says about those gates. Or notice in verse 2, first of all, what he says about those two men, his brother Hananiah. Now, why did he choose his brother? Well, you remember it was his brother who came down to Shushan the palace and gave him the report as to the condition of things up in Jerusalem. So he also is a man with an exercised heart. He comes and gives his brother Nehemiah the report. And that's what led to the great exercise of going back and building the walls. And then this Hananiah, the ruler of the palace, he gave him charge over Jerusalem, for he was a faithful man and feared God above many. Now there are two things, brethren, that each of us should covet. First of all, he was faithful. A faithful man. The day will come when the Lord will say, well done, thou good and successful servant. No. Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Faithfulness is what counts. And one who feared God. These were the two things that characterized the man who was put in charge over the city. Now, he comes to the gates. I said unto them, let not the gates of Jerusalem be opened until the sun be hot. And while they stand by, let them shut the doors and bar them and point watches and so on. This was unusual. The common thing is to open the doors at sunrise and to shut them at sunset. When I first came to North Carolina, I found it very strange here with regards to darkness and light. It was so strange to me to come into a service and still clear as daylight outside. And an hour's time you go out and it's dark. It darks so quickly, half an hour. You say, what's strange about that? Well, if you have been brought up where I was brought up, you would think that was very strange. You see, in the summertime, in my homeland, the sun may set after 9 o'clock at night, but it's still clear till after 11 in summertime. Now, in the wintertime, it's a lot different. You may go a whole day and not see the sun. And then, before it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it's dark. And it'll be dark right on until between 9 and 10 the next morning, in midwinter. You see, it's so different from here. But when I saw this, I'd been told about it, but when I come and experienced it, that the sun set and within half an hour it's dark. That was unusual. But you go to Jerusalem and it's even worse. I left the hotel one night to go way down to a shop, 3 blocks away. The sun just set. It was dark before I got to the shop. 15 minutes and it was gone. So usually they would shut the doors, you see, when the sun went down. Open them when the sun rose. But here is different. He says, you'll wait, not just at the break of day. That may be too early. Wait till the sun is hot. Wait a while till the sun is right up, not just when daylight breaks, but wait till the sun is up before that you dare to open the gates. Why? Because the enemy may be lurking right out there in the shadows. And you're going to guard the city because the city's big, but the inhabitants are few and they've got to be guarded. So be careful how you open and shut the gates. There's got to be protection for God's people and for God's property. Now you remember Paul gave a similar warning to the people when he gathered the elders from Ephesus, and he said, now, remember this, after my departure, the things you'll have to do, take heed to yourself, he says, take heed to yourself and to the flock of God. Take heed, because after my departure, grievous wolves have come in, not sparing the flock. And from among your own selves there may arise men who will be speaking perverted things, seeking to draw away disciples after themselves. So he warned them. And he says, at that rate now, he said, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up. He gave them their warning. Here, Nehemiah was giving them a warning. Now quickly, just take a minute. Following that, he gathers them all together and he goes through the genealogy. Some of them could not find their genealogy. So there's restrictions. Look at verse 64. These sought their register among those that were reckoned by genealogy, but it was not found. Therefore were they, as polluted, put from the priesthood. And the Tirshatha, now Tirshatha is simply a title, this was Nehemiah, said unto them that they should not eat of the most holy things till there stood up a priest with Urim and Thummim. And by the way, the Urim and Thummim have never been found. See, the Urim and Thummim were 2 stones that were kept in the breastplate of the high priest. And from the time that the priesthood was done away with and the temple was destroyed, those holy garments have never been found. And the Urim and Thummim have never been found. But I'll say this, the Urim and Thummim speak of Christ. And the priest with the Urim and Thummim is Christ himself, who is the Urim and Thummim. And these could not stand up until that priest was found. And you and I could never have functioned as priests if we didn't have a high priest who himself is the Urim and Thummim. That is light and perfection. He alone is light and perfection. But here were people who were debarred from the priesthood because they could not prove their genealogy. Now you know that genealogy speaks of birth, doesn't it? A person today cannot possibly offer acceptable worship to God unless they've been born of the Spirit of God. An unsaved man may profess to worship. The preacher may stand in all his dignity and with all his robes and with his voice all tuned into the occasion, you know, and sing song it out and might say, "And beloved, let us worship God." A lot of ridiculous nonsense. An unsaved person cannot offer acceptable worship to God. Only a person saved by the grace of God can offer acceptable worship. These were debarred from the priesthood. They could not show their genealogy. That's why it's so essential for a person to know that they've been born again. I'll have to finish. I leave you to read down the rest of the chapter. You come to then, so the priests and the Levites and the porters and the singers and some of the people and the Netophims and all Israel dwelt in their cities. When the seventh month came, the children of Israel were in their cities. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for this little season we've spent together. Pray that these things shall get home to our hearts. May we realize that it's so important that we learn the standards that thou hast set before us. Be with us now.